Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our Under the Radar podcast.
Hey, who turned out the lights?
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We have.
Oh, there we are.
There we go. Now that we fixed everything, I don't know what's going on.
I had to get my remote.
We have a puppet with us, David Griggs.
Yes.
And we have someone who's not a puppet, I don't think, John Stalica, right?
Not a puppet and not in a bunker, unlike David.
I'm not going into the bunker this year. We are not doing that.
The puppet bunker is where we put David when we get to championship week. We're still a few weeks away from that, but this is our Under the Radar show. And we like to start out by reminding everybody what it means to be under the radar. David, I think
we do. Well, last night was an incredible night. We had LSU winning at Kentucky. We had Louisville blowing a 23-point lead to Duke. And tonight we are not going to discuss any of that at all. We are under the radar. That means it is essentially there are 10 multi-bid leagues. That's the Power Five, which is the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Pac-12, and five other regular multi-bid leagues, which is the Big East, Mountain West, Atlantic 10, albeit not this year, West Coast Conference, and the American. Everything else is in play. There's 22 more leagues. We're going to look at all 22 of them. The other disqualifier, and it currently only impacts one team, although I think we got a second that's getting pretty close, is that if you're ranked in one of the major polls, being the AP or the coaches, which Buffalo is, you're on the radar, not under it, and we talk about you during another show.
Yeah, we talk about you during the Hoops HD report on Monday nights. But when it comes down to it, there are more teams and more schools we discuss on this show than that other show.
Right, yeah.
And more conferences we discuss than that other show.
Yeah, I don't even like the other show. I don't even watch the other show. I'm on the other show, but I don't watch it.
I wish I didn't have to watch the other show, but that's another story. What we like to do each week is start off with a feature conference. And we went back and forth this week. There's a couple different ones that were in play, but I've decided to switch things up, pull a little audible here at the last minute because keep you guys on your toes a lot here, and switch up the conference. And our feature conference for the night, and it should be coming up on the screen right about now, maybe.
Here it is. Is this a conference that's in San Antonio?
No, it's not. It's a conference. It's the Big South Conference.
Ooh.
And we're featuring it for two separate reasons tonight, neither of which have to do actually with the first-place team. I want to start with the third-place team there, though, the Campbell Fighting Camels.
Ooh, yeah, big night for them. Well, for one of them, anyway.
Chris Clemens tonight, you see the score down there towards the bottom, Campbell 87, Hampton 84 on the right-hand side there. Game that just went final this evening, a little while before we came on the air. Set a home record for Campbell, 48 points in tonight's game. Moved past both Danny Manning and then the Big O, Oscar Robertson, into ninth place all time in NCAA history for scoring. I mean, what a game and what a night and what a career for Clemens, who's now just 22 points away from 3,000 for his career, David.
Yeah, and of everything that happened tonight, when you take into effect that it was a historic record-breaking night, or not record-breaking, but he's moving up the standings, and it was a really exciting game, and it propelled Campbell into a tie for second place, and this is a conference that where you finish matters. Well, no, it's only really the first-place team, but a lot of things happening tonight. If you went to that game, you got more out of the price of that ticket than any other game that anybody went to tonight. So good pick for the featured conference, Jed. You normally don't do anything right, but I think you got this one.
Yeah, amazing by him. And really, John Lampier, kind of amazing that by the end of the season, we not only just have one guy who's playing this year that's going to make the top 10 all time. We're going to actually have two, and we have a second guy that's probably going to pass 3,000 for his career also, Mike Dahlman out in South Dakota State. So Clemens and Dom, you know, just amazing points that they're scoring here.
Yeah, we'll be getting into that a little bit later on when we feature the Summit League right here. But also Campbell, Clemens has been very instrumental in their record in conference play.
Now, I do want to mention one thing here. He did pass Oscar Robertson today. You got to remember, Robertson got his points only playing 3 years, playing without the three-point line, playing with less games in the season. Just as a quick comparison here, Clemens now for a career is a little bit over 24 points per game. Oscar Robertson averaged 33.8 per game. And that's only second all time to Pistol Pete. So while he did pass the Big O, had the Big O played today, I think it would not even be in the same ballpark, honestly.
Yeah. Pistol Pete will never, ever, ever be beaten for points per game. I think it was 44.5.
Over 44, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was essentially outscoring NC State every night.
Outscoring NC State twice every night.
Yeah.
Clemens had one of his best nights of his career with 48 points tonight. Pistol Pete, that would have been a very average night for him. Just slightly above his career average. That's ridiculous. Anyhow, the other reason, though, I wanted to feature this conference also is down at the bottom there, where the other game of the night in this conference, way down the last one on the screen there, John, UNC Asheville completed the season sweep of Upstate with a road victory.
Yeah, this is going to be a major strike against their potential centenary hopes right here. They were one of the leading front runners, but because of their road win, I think now the front runner is probably going to be New Hampshire.
Right. And Dave, what is a centenary for those that don't know what we're talking about?
It is the most god-awful team in college basketball, Division I college basketball, but maybe all of it. I don't know. The team is pretty bad. It got its start. It's kind of funny. Centenaries last year, they're now Division III. They were in what is now the Summit League, but what was then? Was it still the Midwestern Collegiate, or had they changed the name yet? I don't remember, but
it was Summit League, I believe.
Yeah, we were doing our mock committee, and we decided to vote Centenary onto the board for consideration just to drive Kyle Lamb, who was the chairman that year, insane. And he kept trying to get them off the board, and we kept them up there. We kept them up there to the end, and they're still up there. The Centenary Award, we recognize it every year, and every year we put them into our committee, onto our nomination board for consideration. What's it called? The consideration board?
The under consideration board.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. We put them on there, and we consider them throughout the entire process. Yes.
They've never gotten voted in yet. Although there's been years when I thought that the centenary award would have probably should be it over something. But here you can see on the left is UNC Asheville now with two wins, including a road win, which is almost an automatic disqualifier. No team has ever won the centenary award with a road victory against a D1 team. New Hampshire over there on the right. Only the one win over Lowell against D1 competition. So they are probably the front runner. There's a pretty bad Chicago State team, a pretty bad Mississippi Valley State team out there. But I think New Hampshire's the front runner right now.
I think losing at home to, 336 net Binghamton also has to help as well.
Yes. Yeah. Now, in Asheville's defense, they did have a home loss to Fayetteville State, who only has 5 wins at the D2 level. But
oh, Lord, that is poor. Oh,
but the win at Upstate really, really hurts. let's go ahead and take a look at the upcoming schedule here, the Big South, because David, as you mentioned, the winner of this conference regular season will host the conference tournament. It looks like it's going to be Radford at the moment, but a lot of seeding battles going around the rest of the way here.
Yeah, Radford, we've been doing our mock brackets, and we've been putting them around 14, 15, which is where we belong. But like by 15 seed standards, this is a pretty good 15 seed if all the chalk holds. Now, it never does. But I mean, when you look at when you look at what they've done, I see you're pulling them up here. The win at Texas, the win at Notre Dame, the road wins at Winthrop, Hampton, who we talked about earlier, and then you look at their losses. They were kind of competitive when they went to Clemson and Greensboro. So while I'm not going to predict that they're going to win a game in the round of 64, what I will say is that this is a much better than normal 15 seed if that's ultimately where they end up.
I would have to agree with that, although I have a feel that they end up as a 14 seed because you're going to see one or two surprises in conference tournaments that's going to push everybody up, assuming that they can win the conference tournament. And with guys like Chris Clements in this conference, that's no given. The other game in the upcoming schedule, definitely want to circle Saturday's game, Campbell at Presbyterian. That's where Clemens is going to be going for his 3,000th career point. So another milestone coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, he might score 3,000 points against Presby.
He could. Yeah. John, let's turn around. We actually mentioned New Hampshire already, so let's slide right on over to the America East here. Not really discuss New Hampshire, but how about the top of the conference where well, let's talk about the team that beat New Hampshire tonight badly, maybe.
Well, if we're talking about now, we already gave New Hampshire their 5 seconds here. Yeah. I think we have to continue to focus on teams like Vermont and Stony Brook who are going to be continuing their chase for 1-2 and UMBC also trying to hang with them after a bit of a surprising loss the week prior.
Yeah, surprise us, it did bounce back this week, although David, winning at Maine by 1 point is not a good sign. It's a win, but it's not a good sign for UMBC.
No, and it's kind of surprising that they had to sweat it out that badly. Again, this, I mean, there's a big difference between, you know, third and second, and they're right in that hunt to second. And the reason, as you know, is that it determines who plays at home in the semis. So, like, losing that game would have probably dropped them out. I mean, I don't think they would have caught Stony Brook had they not won that one. Now, they still may not. But this is why I like conferences that do it like this, because you have these stakes games. Like, who's going to get to host all the way through? Who are the two teams that are going to get to host in the semis? And that's an exciting race when you look at how few games separate second, third, and fourth place right there.
Very good point. Let's look at the upcoming schedule here also in the conference. This is a conference, as you mentioned, that does play every game at campus sites, so it's always the highest seed hosting. This weekend, Vermont is at Hartford. A little bit of maybe a tough road test for them there. Stony Brook at New Hampshire, not a tough road test for them there.
Right, yes. Very tough home test for New Hampshire, though. Very, yes, very,
very, very tough.
Yes.
But by the same token, I think one other race that may be worth watching is Hartford and UMass Lowell. They'll probably end up facing each other in the first round, but whoever gets home court is also going to be a nice advantage as well.
Good point there. And Hartford with the slight edge because with one less loss overall right now. But Lowell, surprisingly good. Surprisingly good this season, actually, by Lowell standards.
Right, yes.
A-Sun, where we just saw what we thought was going to be the game of the night. It was ended up being a little bit of a close game this evening, but Liberty did go to Lipscomb. And David, I tweeted this out. Did Liberty and Lipscomb end up participating in your road win exchange program this year?
And that can help certain teams. Like, we've seen it in the SEC with Ole Miss and Mississippi State. If they entered into that agreement, Lipscomb made a huge mistake. Liberty's not exactly beating a tournament caliber team on the road here. But
right. Now we've got this Lipscomb profile. This Lipscomb was a team that we were talking about with legitimate at-large possibilities, but now you add a second quadrant two home loss onto the profile against a team that is not a name brand. On the other hand, you got Liberty, who now picks up their best win of the season. So, you know, what do you do? Assuming these two don't lose again until they play each other in the conference tournament, does the loser have a shot? That's the question.
Lipscomb has a much better shot than Liberty just because, you know, the road wins at TCU and the road win at TCU. And I think the win at Liberty counts for quite a bit. What's interesting. I mean, what's interesting is that the profile will change. I mean, say Lipscomb had beaten them twice and then entered the conference tournament. I would argue that anything you did at that point is just repeating what you've already done. So you shouldn't get more credit for it. But at the same time, anything you fail to do, like, losing to Liberty really shouldn't move them down, because why would you punish a team that they've already beaten twice simply for not doing it a third time? But now that they've split and now that they're tied and neither – I mean, these teams are way better than anybody else in this league. How do you measure that if, if they were to play again and Lipscomb were to lose to them for a second time?
Right, because now you can't say we're punishing them for a team they beat twice. We're now punishing them because they lost two out of three to that team.
Right, yeah.
I'll measure it with this question right here. Assuming they were both to win out, would the loser of the championship game possibly get up to the NIT as opposed to just the CBI or CIT, which they would?
Oh, if it's Lipscomb, I definitely think so.
Well, first of all, if it is whoever is the number one seed, they will automatically be in the NIT. So you've got to remember that. That would be an NIT auto bid. But if it is the team that finishes in second place technically that loses, I think the NIT should come calling for either one of them.
Yeah. Chad, you mentioned something. We did a little bit of research. The last stated tiebreaker was RPI. We assume that it's the net. So if this holds like it is now, Lipscomb would still be the host team in the conference tournament, but we don't know for sure that that is the tiebreaker.
Yeah, we don't know for sure. As we get closer to championship week, I'm certain that that will be announced officially by the ASUN. I just wasn't able to confirm this year's thing. And in the past it said RPI, which is not technically available anymore, although we do have it available. We have last year's, the RPI numbers as if this was last year on the screen there. And either way, it would have been Lipscomb, so I don't think it really mattered too much. John, the upcoming schedule here in the conference, Liberty's taking the trips to North Alabama. Well, Lipscomb is at Kennesaw and then at Gulf Coast coming up over the course of the next week here. So road tests, at least for these teams, they both have 3 out of 4 games remaining on the road. So keep an eye
a road test and also a team like Florida Gulf Coast, which is starting to hit about as much of a stride as it can. NJIT isn't going to be a picnic either, but I think for, who was it, Liberty, that's going to be their final game of the year where they actually go to NJIT.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. All right, let's keep things rolling here over to the Big Sky Conference. One of our favorite conferences in terms of teams and our least favorite conferences in terms of viewing ability, but another upset this week, though, John. Weber State falling to Southern Utah. Seems to keep happening. These top three teams are losing inexplicable games here this year.
Yeah, speaking of a centenary, here's another team that was actually, I don't know if they actually won the award, but were close to it, but actually a sweep for Southern Utah last week. So they are now over 500 in Big Sky for the first time since I can remember.
I believe they were our winner a few years back. I think you're correct.
They were.
And let's just keep things rolling here, though. The Big Sky has all these games that they're playing for the top seed so that the number one seed can go ahead and do what, David?
Wear white in Reno?
Boise. Boise this year, yeah. Neutral site, no longer on campus sites.
They've ruined it in
what they did in this conference tournament.
They have absolutely ruined it.
So not nearly as much at stake here, but, you know, a regular season championship is a regular season championship.
Yeah.
And a big game along that way coming up here Thursday night. Montana's at Weber State. It's become the top rivalry in this conference in recent years.
Yeah, it has, and it probably has been for a while. Well, yeah, it probably has been for a while because, you know, you have Montana State, but Montana is clearly the alpha program there where over the years Weber and Montana have kind of dominated the league.
And then Northern Colorado has to go to Idaho, and then the Nokoe Woo Cup on Saturday.
Yeah, and that's a tough trip. I mean, to go from Idaho to Eastern Washington, I mean, those are two schools that, David, they are 8 miles apart, and they're playing Monday night.
Yeah, well, Idaho and Wazoo are 8 miles apart. I don't know how far it is from Eastern
Washington. Okay, that's Eastern Washington. You're right. A little further than Wazoo, but Idaho and Eastern Washington, that is a rivalry coming up Monday night, so circle that one, too. Where should we go from here? How about the Big West Conference?
I guess so.
All right. Over in the Big West Conference, David, let you start things off here where I think we're starting to have a team pull away in this league.
Yeah, Irvine, they're running downhill. Like most of their toughest games are behind them. They've already played in Hawaii and won. They played at UC Santa Barbara and won. And if you look at their remaining schedule, it's not that they're not going to be challenged at all, but they got Santa Barbara at home. They got Cal Poly at home. They could and probably will win out going into the conference tournament.
I fully agree with that because on March 2nd, they do have the huge Rivervine matchup still to go here.
Yeah, well, yeah. The Rivervine Cup. Whew, boy.
On the road, too. That's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not buying it.
Yeah.
Upcoming schedule real quick in the Big West. Let's keep things rolling here and try to get
one of the God, the net does not like Irvine. The RPI, I don't understand why no one likes Irvine.
Probably because they're not winning by as much of a margin compared to other teams that are also under the radar.
They're in my top 10. I know that you all probably didn't vote for them, but they're in mine again.
You would be one of three of us that probably voted for them. That's all I got to say. But, the big game, obviously, this week is Saturday's Irvine's home game against Santa Barbara. Santa Barbara is still, in my opinion, the second-best team in the league, even if they are tied with Fullerton in the standings there. And, you know, if Irvine is going to lose a home game, it is this Saturday. If Irvine gets by this game, I think you are right, David. They're probably not losing, getting seriously challenged again until the Big West tournament.
Yeah.
Colonial Conference, John, where despite the slip-up previously, Hofstra is now just starting to do it again and rolling.
That's probably going to be more of an aberration, but even that was against a second-place Northeastern team that was also their travel partner here. But the Huskies are also going to be keeping a little bit of heat on Hofstra with their wins against William & Mary and Elon as well.
By identical scores there, by the way, a little weird little item.
Yeah.
62 to 60 games.
The top three teams, Hofstra, while playing the best, when you look at the top three, College of Charleston, you were really holding your nose. Was it three or four in a row that they've lost? But they finally seem to have pulled themselves out of it. The conference tournament right in their backyard, and it wouldn't shock me if any of those top three ended up winning it. It would if anybody else in the bottom seven did.
I'd agree with that. The upcoming schedule for this week, John, in the Colonial, should be on the screen any second now. Maybe. There it is. And Hofstra actually gets a little preview of the conference tournament Thursday night at Charleston.
Yep, both Hofstra and Northeastern are going to be going south to Charleston and Wilmington. And as far as Charleston themselves, again, they'll be hosting both Hofstra and Northeastern here.
Right. Conference USA is a conference that we probably need to spend a few minutes on here.
Yeah.
It almost was our feature conference for this week, actually, even though I think we featured them once earlier this year, because we're coming up on the end of the first part of the season, in a way, with the end of the regular scheduled conference season here, and we got a little bit of a logjam for some of these spots here. Well, first of all, I guess for those that are not familiar with it, Conference USA with a new scheduling format this year. After this upcoming Saturday's games, they will break the teams up into three pods, the top five, the next five, and the bottom four. And your last four games of the conference season will be played just against your pod. After that, the standings will be where they are for the conference tournament, other than the teams in the top pod have to get the top five seeds. The teams in the next pod have to get the next five seeds.
Yeah.
And only two teams from the bottom pod will even make the conference tournament as the 11 and the 12.
In the meantime, have fun trying to figure out the logjam for the five-way tie for eighth place right here.
Yeah, that's one of the jams that's going to be decided here, is who can avoid that bottom pod and guarantee themselves a spot in the conference tournament, and who may need to pick up another game to get there.
Yeah, because when you look at 11 through 14, you know, you're talking about, I'm assuming that they'll play four games instead of three. So you're going to be playing somebody twice.
Exactly.
And who you, like how they end up scheduling that's going to have a lot to do with who, because not all 14 get in. It's only the top 12.
Right. So in that bottom pod, two teams would not make it. Now, with Middle Tennessee and Rice both two games up in the loss column on UTIP and three on Charlotte, it may not be that exciting at the end of the day.
Right, yeah.
We'll see what happens there. Maybe, you know, one of those teams can make a run. And at the top of the conference, though, John, Old Dominion with a nice week with a pair of road wins at UAB and at Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, they get the edge for now, at least as far as the loss column. Texas San Antonio is still going to be on their heels thanks to their win against Florida International and also Florida Atlantic.
And Marshall kind of tanking here with a couple of pair of losses this week, David, including losing to Rice, knocking themselves right out of that top pod.
Right, and Marshall, they were a team we were kind of big on at times, but not looking at so far. Something else about this league, and we'll talk more about this later, but I'll go ahead and point it out now. It has a unique distinction of having sent a team to the round of 32 4 years in a row. And now, to be fair, like only once was it a huge surprise. I mean, not that they always won as the weaker, is the lower seeded team, but last year when Marshall did it, we thought Marshall was good, but that wasn't who we were picking to win the conference at any point until they won the conference tournament. Does it happen again? Like if it is Old Dominion or North Texas, both teams that have played pretty well, or Western Kentucky, stacked with talent, is this can they do it a fifth year in a row?
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody else came out and did it. I mean, just like Marshall did last year, Southern Miss suddenly wins the conference tournament and finds himself in the Sweet 16. Just the way that this conference has gone, because I think this conference is better than it gets credit for. I think the basketball here is better than it gets credit for.
It is. Maybe not in Charlotte and UTEP, but all the way.
Well, Charlotte, UTEP, maybe not Middle Tennessee or Rice this year. But above that, even the Florida schools, Florida Atlantic, Florida National, have had their moments this season.
Yeah.
See, what really disappoints me was Conference USA really could have had a throwback to its origins and had a red pod, a white pod, and a blue pod.
That would have been awesome. And you know what they also need is a nice red, white, and blue curtain.
Yes. We need the curtain. When they go into the pods, are they bringing the curtain? Or is that not until the
tournament? I do not believe that there will be curtains at the pod play, David, no. Horizon League, John, NKU picks up another pair of home victories over Detroit and Oakland fairly easily. Still a game up on Wright State, who is on their heels, though. They did sweep this week as well.
Yeah, they both get the sweep, and as we'll be getting to a little bit later, they also have a pivotal matchup on Friday night coming up, where if NKU wins that one, they'll have a two-game edge plus a season sweep. But if Wright State manages to win that one, NKU, I think, would still have the lead for now by virtue of a better record against Illinois-Chicago. So if Wright State wins, we do have to start paying attention to Horizon tiebreakers as well.
That John mentioned that already. The Friday night NKU at Wright State game, huge game in Horizon.
Right.
Horizon.
Not quite the same when it comes to tiebreakers, because this conference used to do it not just right, but exceptionally right, because it was campus sites and a ladder. Well, now it's up in Detroit, and they're moving to Indianapolis next year.
Yeah, and David, yeah, and I think maybe we should spend a quick moment talking about that. Talk about the conference that does things wrong. They decide to move out of Detroit after this season. Let's just take a quick moment.
Good idea.
And they asked for bids for who wants to host it, with one of the rules in the bid sheet being that you cannot host it in an arena that is your home arena for one of the members. It has to be a neutral court. It could be a next door, but it has to be a neutral court. NKU went and talked to the city of Cincinnati right next door, John, your hometown there, and put together a package to play the games at US Bank Arena and you know, spend all this time putting this great package together.
I'm sorry, this is
as far as we know, the only other bid submitted was by IUPUI, who submitted a bid to play the games on campus at IUPUI, which was not allowed according to the rules of the submission.
I mean, well, we know NKU's administration is royally off because of that, but by the same token...
Let me finish the whole package here for those that don't know it yet. One second, John. But so these two bids are submitted. The Horizon League league offices accept and give the award to IUPUI, who submitted an invalid bid.
But let me finish my thought here. Is that Wright State also has reason to be angry too, because they just as easily could have submitted a bid, because they have a history of hosting this conference tournament as well.
Yeah, but NKU is the one that put together the Cincinnati bid. NKU turned around and said, we could have put together a way better bid had you told us we could bid to play it at home at the BB&T Arena, which is a great facility they have there at NKU. It could easily host the conference tournament. And they are unbelievably pissed off at the Horizon League right now, to say the least, David.
Right. So IUPUI decides they want to host. They didn't like their option, so they're like, well, screw it. We'll just put in our own arena anyway. And they won!
That's the funny part, but NKU, and you know, the last thing the Horizon League really needs is a team like NKU to say, you know what, forget you. The Ohio Valley's docking. We think we're going to go take a walk, and because NKU,
just go back to campus sites, please. Just go back to the way it was before.
I wouldn't be surprised to see something change with future years. The next 3 years are supposed to be in Indianapolis. One of those may change to Kentucky over the summer when this is resolved at the league.
But honestly, unless NKU gets football, I don't think the Ohio Valley is going to be in their future. But
it was an example. Maybe it's the Missouri Valley even. Who knows?
Even better.
Maybe it's the Big East. You know. Yeah. let's get back into things here again. Over at the Ivy League, David, where Yale, despite the slip up at Harvard, where they really got dominated last week, came back nicely with a nice win over Princeton and Penn this week.
Yeah, Penn is still a head scratcher. I just can't help but think that their ceiling is high, but their basement is low. And how are they 2-4? Because it's getting to the point, it's a conference tournament of four. We're about halfway through, and Penn, there they are, two games back. That's a lot to make up with just seven games to go when some of those games are against really bad teams, and Harvard and Cornell just aren't going to lose to Dartmouth, Columbia, and the like.
But to be fair to Penn, five of their first six games have been on the road, and they only have one road trip remaining, which I think is Harvard and Dartmouth.
Do you think they're going to catch Cornell? I mean, that's it can be done, but, I mean, that's two games with seven to go. That's a lot to make up.
Well, Cornell this week does have Yale this week. I think Cornell has Yale twice still, so there is a chance here.
Okay,
but Penn is going to have to beat Yale when they play again in a couple weeks. So, or if they lose Yale, they're going to have to beat both Harvard and Cornell. They still play Cornell twice, I believe.
Okay.
No, once. I'm sorry. They play the Dartmouth Brown trip twice, which does help also because
the Brown mouth.
By playing Dartmouth and Brown twice still for Penn, that's four more possible wins there.
Yeah.
But this week Yale has the Columbia Cornell road trip. That Yale Cornell game, maybe circle that one on Saturday.
It's actually Harvard and Dartmouth that are travel partners here.
You're right. Yeah, Harvard and Dartmouth. Okay. I just ignore everything I said. It's Harvard Dartmouth, not Cornell. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
Just David, take over. I'm out.
All right. So Yale probably cruising. They're hosting, right? The conference tournament is there.
Yes, they are.
Okay. So there they are. Now onto the Metro Atlantic. Oh, gee, this is what you want me to take over? And how about Ryder crashing into the mountain?
That's to say the least here. Ryder loses at home to Canisius, loses at home to Siena. They've lost, I think, five or six in a row now. This Ryder team, I'm done with them. And at this point, why not? There's three teams tied in loss column, but why not? I'm going with a Mama team that won one non-conference game all season.
Yeah, I mean, we've been dogging the Metro Atlantic for being worse than normal. It's turning out to be kind of a Metro Atlantic-ish type of year when you consider that Monmouth, who won one out-of-conference game, is now the first-place team.
It's literally unbelievable now. And then the other two teams there, Quinnipiac, Canisius, these are not teams that anybody expected to be anywhere near the top.
And even Quinnipiac also has an interesting storyline because Baker Dunleavy may end up beating his dad to the NCAA tournament pretty easily.
He'll beat his dad. Siena, who's been awful for a few years now, and they were pretty lousy at the start of the conference. They're red hot. They pick up the win at Manhattan and the win at Ryder this week, both by 2 points. They're right in it. Everybody's in it, although they did lose tonight to Tim Cluse's Iona team. But
right, Tim Cluse's Iona team.
And again, they're all playing for the right to
go to Dayton.
No.
Oh, go to Siena.
Go to Siena.
Sorry, go to the Pepsi. All right. Yeah, a meaningless regular season.
And then go to Dayton. You're right.
Yeah, and then go to Dayton.
Monmouth at Ryder coming up Friday night. I mean, I guess if you want interesting, exciting basketball, you can watch all these games. If you want basketball with like that's good basketball, you can watch none of these games. That's
right,
kind of. But lots of games that are coming up this week. You just try to watch them all, I guess, or none of them are. Let's go to some real basketball, John. The Mid-American Conference.
Yeah, this would be an example of Akron. They failed their test against Buffalo, so they weren't able to be quite as white hot as they were in the wagon wheel against Kent State. And Bowling Green was another team that fell behind by double digits at home against Central Michigan, but still managed to come back in that one.
That was after they lost the home game to a Toledo team that is now, David, is 20-4 there, and coming up Friday night hosting Buffalo, a huge, huge game that's only half under the radar.
Right, yeah. It is big. Another, like, showcase road game for Buffalo. It's going to be rocking, and there's quite a bit at stake. Toledo can't really get to the bubble, I don't think, although their net hovering around 50s. I suppose it's possible, but either way, it's still a really big game for the Rockets.
Yeah, I think it's worth pulling up that Toledo profile real quick here to ask that question. Does this team have any shot at all at being discussed, especially if they can pick up this win at home over Buffalo and then maybe win out to the MAC championship game? I look at three quadrant three losses. They would have one quadrant one win with that situation over Buffalo, but I don't think it's enough.
Yeah, I don't think it is either, but then again, the bubble is pitiful.
So the only loss I would really take exception would be the Ball State, just because that was a home game. Kent State, Wright State, not the easiest places to win, but really should have been wins for Toledo given their makeup this year.
I guess I got to steal one of David's lines here. No, they're not the easiest places to win, but it's not easy to make the NCAA tournament either.
Right. Yeah.
you got to win. You got to find a way to win those games. If you put just together, let's see what their strength of schedule was there. Let me go back to that. The number 258 non-conference strength of schedule. You can't complain that when you don't get an at-large bid, can you?
Especially compared to other SoCon teams that probably had stronger non-conference schedules as well.
Right. SoCon. Woohoo. Is that what we got coming up? The SoCon.
The next conference is the MEAC. And we have breaking news here because there's a team in red that has not been there all season.
Yeah. Chad doing a little investigative work. It's not one of the teams in the top two, in the top 300. So no real huge deficit. But what happened? An APR ban that they just learned of, that struck me as kind of crazy.
There was, I think it had to go back for a couple of years, or something may have been under appeal for a little while now, but the NCAA did officially rule that Florida A&M is ineligible for the postseason this year because of an APR ban. I think it was one actually that had been there a couple of years, I think last year or the year before, and then it had been lifted during some further investigation and further numbers being crunched. Well, it turns out, nope, no good. So FAMU is out because of an APR ban. They joined Alabama A&M as the two APR teams. And that actually brought our survival board down to 349 teams left that could win the NCAA tournament this year.
Yeah, it did. I in all seriousness, I kind of hate it for those kids. Everybody that's playing on that team is eligible, presumably.
Yes.
And you hate that they don't get to play because of something that happened several years ago.
The other story in this conference, John, though, Norfolk State suffered their first conference loss over the weekend, losing at Bethune-Cookman.
A little bit of a surprise, but then again, this is not a conference, as strange as it sounds, where you're going to be running the table. But it also means North Carolina A&T, they're only a game behind the Spartans themselves now.
Yeah, and how about, Chad, white-hot Savannah State winning four in a row now?
Well, and David, I got a little news here. Now, with 12 teams in the conference tournament, the top four seeds would have received byes.
Yeah.
Now that FAMU is ineligible, the top five seeds will receive byes. And because of FAMU being eligible, even though they're in sixth place, Savannah State is sitting on the five seed right now. So FAMU being ineligible, Savannah State just made it, if this spot holds, just made it to the quarterfinals of the MEAC tournament.
That is amazing. We are, and they're just three wins away.
Three wins away. And three wins away from their final game ever. But
yeah. Oh, they'll make headlines. They will make more news than they ever thought they possible if they were to win this conference tournament.
Norfolk State with a pair of games, including a huge game coming up Monday night, battle for first place where they're hosting North Carolina A&T. So if you want to watch some MEAC action Monday night, I would circle that one.
Yeah.
Let's keep things rolling here, though, over to the Missouri Valley Conference, where John, I don't even know what to say here about this league, because I'm just so unbelievably disappointed in everything I've seen out of this conference this year.
Yeah, that may have had something to do with a team like Bradley actually appending a Loyola Chicago. But at the same time, a team like Drake now only a full game back themselves. And Missouri State, we did laugh at them a couple weeks ago when they held Loyola. I think it was under 50 points at home. The Bears are suddenly a game behind the Ramblers in the standings now.
Yeah, every time one team starts making some noise, like in Illinois State, they lose a couple games. It's just –
It could be an interesting just jamboree type event at Arch Madness this year because they are so evenly matched. But no one whoever wins this tournament is not going anywhere.
I give Loyola Chicago as much chance with this tournament as I do Evansville right now, quite honestly.
Right, yeah.
I guess the only disadvantage is the teams that finish 7 through 10 do have to play that extra game. So
So
that may be the only thing to fight for the rest of the way here is to avoid those first round games.
Mm-hmm.
There's the upcoming schedule. Watch them all. Watch none of them. I'm not certain that it's going to matter at the end of the day.
Right. Southern Illinois at Valpo. Barry Hinson's barbecue sauce.
Let's go to a real conference, the Northeast Conference. The conference does everything.
The Northeast Conference. One game separates the top four teams. It is amazing. It is always amazing.
And even more than that, another game back to two more teams, and now there's a three-way tie for that 7, 8, 9 spot, and the 9th and 10th place teams don't make the conference tournament. So it is.
Right, yeah. So crazy. Great storylines along the way. How about like St. Francis Brooklyn, who we started off on fire in a bit of a slump. Wagner right there. You just never know what's going to happen on any given night. It is the best league in America.
Last week we were talking about Sacred Heart suddenly looking really good. Well, they turn around and go ahead and lose at home to Mount St. Mary's, who is the one team that we don't like in this conference.
Right,
I don't even know what to say here. But I guess what we do want to do is take a look at the upcoming schedule, because we have one of our favorite rivalries of the entire
country. Yes, we do.
This week.
The Battle of Brooklyn.
The Battle of Brooklyn. There it is. Tomorrow night, Thursday night, LIU Brooklyn, St. Francis Brooklyn, round 2. Do not miss it.
Drop what you're doing and watch that game. I mean, you should watch all 10 of these games every single week, start to finish. You really should. But you definitely don't want to miss that one. And how about, like, the two Pennsylvania schools, Chad, kind of sprinting ahead to everybody else?
And playing each other Saturday. So there's
That'll be on the STFU's campus.
Right, and that is a big game because, again, conference home court advantage all throughout the conference tournament. And not only that, this league reseeds. Yep. So every game kind of important.
Every game absolutely important. John, a conference with a couple of very, very good teams at the top of it, the OVC coming up next here. Belmont, Murray, Austin Peay all tied for first. Jack State following a head-scratching loss to Tennessee Martin, down a game behind them.
It does clear up the logjam a little bit for now, because now it's Belmont, Murray State, and Austin Peay among the top three right here.
Yeah, instead of a four-way tie, it's a three-way tie with one game separating them from fourth.
Yeah, but David, this is going to be fun, especially if we get these four teams into the semifinals of the conference tournament, which I expect we will, although two of them are going to have to play a quarterfinal round game to get there. But this is going to be three great games in that great Ohio Valley Conference state of Indiana.
Yeah, the state of Indiana, brought to you by visitmyrtlebeach.com, the Ohio Valley Conference, which has no teams in Ohio, playing its tournament in Indiana, which has no teams in Indiana, and being sponsored by Visit Myrtle Beach. What an event. Anyway.
We are excited. I'm so excited.
Yeah. And when you look at the difference between the fourth and fifth place team here, it is a bit of a cavern separating them. So the bottom eight, not really very strong. When you look at the top eight teams, you kind of have Moorhead trying to hold on. They got a one-game lead, kind of a big game coming up against Eastern Kentucky. They play each other twice, and that could end up maybe not necessarily definitively determining, but playing a big role to see who gets there. And everybody else kind of blah, but the top of this league is really fun to watch.
Right. And it is, you know, only the top eight teams make the conference tournament. So there will be battles again. Good battles here, I think, for the final spots. And huge game, another big game coming up here Thursday night. Murray State at Austin Peay. Definitely want to be circling that one.
Right. Normally the first teams off the survival board this conference. So
it might come down to the last day if these standings stay this tight, though.
Right. Yeah.
John, over in the Patriot League, where Bucknell, real nice win over Lehigh Monday night, and it's just, it looks like they're ready to cruise right into that top seed in the conference tournament to host it at their campus site.
Yeah, they'll get to host it themselves. And Army, another under-the-radar story, at least by Patriot League standards, also looking, I think, for their second record over 500. They actually won a field trip game at home today against, Boston U, and actually swept the Terriers this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, Boston U, we kind of liked them a little bit early in the season. They're now dead last.
Yeah, dead last. But anyway, Bucknell, not only with a three-game lead, but I think they have the sweep of Lehigh, don't they?
Yes.
So they essentially have a virtual four-game lead with seven to go. So they are – it would take a collapse for them to not wrap up home court advantage.
Right. Bucknell this week coming up is at Holy Cross, at Colgate, a pair of road games. The game at Colgate could be a little bit interesting.
Yeah.
Just because they are the third best team in the conference. But let's move right on over to the SoCon. David, let me let you start things off here in a conference that we're talking about some really, really good teams.
And we could spend an hour just on this conference. Wofford, obviously, a two-game lead over Greensboro. If you pull up their profile, we've been big on them all year, you and I. Tytel likes them, but he guesses the committee more so than he does his own. But I noticed that even he has them way inside the bubble, a 9 in his latest bracket. And you look at other people that, while not as accurate as Tytel, respected in the business, Joe Lenardi, Jerry Palm, a lot of your mainstream bracketology sites liking this Wofford team as well. You never know what the committee's going to do, but is it safe to say that maybe it isn't even a bubble team? Is this team inside the bubble? And will they stay there even if they drop another game or two?
Well, like, we got to look at those last five games. First of all, they cannot lose at home to VMI. They cannot lose at Chattanooga. And they can't lose a tricky game at Samford, which is not an easy one.
And you may recall, they beat Samford in overtime on a last-second shot at home. So that is a tricky game.
Yeah. And then on top of that, I think they need to at least split those other two, Greensboro at home, at Furman, at least do that.
Yeah.
I think they have one more loss available to them. It's got to be either the Greensboro or the Furman game.
Yeah. I would like to talk about Furman. I know you don't have them up on the screen yet.
Let me replace Wofford with Furman here. We could mention Greensboro also here in a minute. But
okay, yeah.
Wofford up on the left.
Okay, thing about this Furman team, they're popping up here in a minute. They are extremely young. Like, the bulk of their roster is underclassmen. And sometimes when you get a team like that and you look at some of the games that they've dropped, that's indicative of a young team. But a good young team is really starting to hit their stride. And this Furman team is. I think they've won 5 or 6 in a row. You've seen what they can do when they play up to the top of their ceiling, the win at Villanova. It wouldn't shock me at all, even though they're 4 games back now. The big rivalry game with Wofford coming up, I think that they can take them down at home. And even if they finish 4th, and I think they will, I think they could win this conference tournament. I really do.
Yeah, and really interesting that their two most interesting home games of the season have not been played yet, Greensboro and Wofford, both coming up here. First of those two tomorrow night. But, John, what about this Greensboro team here on the right? Only 3 losses overall in the season, all Quadrant 1 losses. Now with that big win in East Tennessee State, how about their next 2 games, even more importantly?
Well, if they can get even one of these 2, that can actually help their case pretty dramatically. If they win both of them and avoid stubbing their toes, I think they've also got a very good shot at an at-large case themselves.
I've been making the at-large case for them. If they sweep this week at Furman, at Wofford, I think they're an NCAA tournament team, as long as they don't do something incredibly stupid the rest of the way.
I do too, because then you're looking at road wins at East Tennessee State, Wofford, and Furman. Really tough places to win. And you look at their losses. The LSU game, they were right in there. With Kentucky, I think at the under 8, it was tied or very close. Yeah. They ran out of gas. The only team that really clobbered them, and God, they did clobber them, was Wofford. So this is a good team. Everybody, it is as excited as everyone was about Furman early and Wofford now. This team won the conference tournament last year and took Gonzaga to the wall. And most people don't remember that. This is a really good Greensboro team.
And let's not even forget about East Tennessee State. While they've got no at-large chances, they're going to be very dangerous when you get to Asheville there for the conference tournament. Samford might be as well, which means you'll probably end up with like Western Carolina winning the whole thing and just
– Right, yeah. Citadel VMI, 7-10, that's who would play in the opening round, and God, we love that rivalry.
Yeah, that's a fun one. Here's the upcoming schedule. We already mentioned that huge game here Thursday night, Greensboro at Furman. Followed by Saturday, Greensboro at Wofford. So huge, huge week for UNC Greensboro and for the entire SoCon conference here.
Yeah.
And this could be the week that Wofford possibly gets up to the top 25 if they're able to get both of those wins.
Well, yeah. They got to beat VMI. You know, beating Greensboro at home, especially if Greensboro wins at Furman to improve their profile a bit, that may be enough that Wofford should begin some serious top 25 love. I agree with you, John. Over in the Southland Conference, I don't know that any of you caught it tonight, but our undefeated Sam Houston State team was taken to the wire at Corpus Christi, but pulled out a 70-69 victory, just barely.
I caught the score.
Okay. Yeah. I honestly did not watch any of the game either, but Sam Houston State still now rolling through this conference here, 12-0 at this point.
Yeah, nice win earlier in the week. A lot more positive win against, or was it over the weekend against against Abilene Christian? That was a pretty fun, fun game to watch. So
that was on 98-85 on Saturday, but got tested by Corpus Christi tonight. Did pick up the win. Abilene.
Yeah, it was this UTR week. UTR week start on Wednesday.
I guess this is another conference, only 8 teams in the conference tournament, so you want to keep an eye on some of those battles for the 8th spot there, and keep an eye on Incarnate Word, who could end up being the next team eliminated off our survival board. They're already 3 games out of the conference tournament.
It was a good week for Go Colonels here, getting a win at New Orleans, even though they did have a loss against Abilene Christian tonight, so certainly a step in the right direction.
Yeah, a little bit disappointing for New Orleans, who had been playing really well heading into this week, having that loss, and I don't see that they played tonight.
Yeah,
I think they had tonight off. But upcoming schedule here, Sam Houston with another road test at Lamar coming up over the weekend. So that's going to be 3 straight road games for them before I think they get Nicholls State at home next week.
Yeah.
Right. Let's move on to whatever's up next. John, you want to talk about the SWAC?
Well, we can talk about Prairie View finally falling from the ranks of the unbeaten as far as conference play goes. Texas Southern gets their revenge here, but the Panthers still have a healthy 2-game lead in the standings.
Yeah, and David, did you enjoy watching that game?
No.
Because it wasn't available anywhere, not even on a stream. Texas Southern, what the hell? Get a damn stream on your website. Yeah. Seriously, you've been in the class of this conference for years now. You can't stream your games. But
I know, and I mean, Houston played there last year, and all their games were on television. Why can't Texas Southern get their games on?
It makes no sense. But anyhow, we do still have Prairie View with a 2-game lead, and it is campus sites for the quarterfinal round before they're going to Birmingham this year for the rest of the conference tournament.
Yeah, site of the SWAC football championship. The reason it's in Birmingham is because there's no SWAC teams in Birmingham.
Are there any SWAC teams in Alabama? Well, there's an ineligible. There's one that's ineligible, and then you got Alabama State there, right?
Yeah, the Magic City Classic, State and A&M.
That's actually coming up Saturday, State and A&M.
Yep, nice rivalry.
Texas Southern's going to be at Grambling. Prairie View's going to be at Jackson State. So all those games are up there on the screen.
Yeah.
Let's keep things rolling right on here, David, over to the Summit League. We talked about Mike Dahm a little bit, but South Dakota State is just kind of rolling now at this point.
Yeah, and I know we say it every week, but just to reiterate it, they are on pace to win out. And if they do, where do you put them? Because while they kind of underachieved at times out of conference and lost some games that we thought they'd win, their ceiling is still as high as it was. And they're capable of winning a game in the round of 64. They almost did it a year ago with pretty much the same roster.
Yeah, when you look at it as a pure profile standpoint, it's
garbage.
There's 4 bad losses there. There's nothing in the top 2 quadrants. They do have 9 wins in a row. They do have, not only do they have Mike Dahm, they've got David Jenkins, who's close behind him in scoring on this team this year. And they're going to be a dangerous team that I think just really played some lousy basketball in November, especially the loss to Tulane and at Gulf Coast.
Yeah, they did. And even with those, I don't know how much closer they'd be, although you could make an argument for them. But this is a dangerous team.
The game in Nevada was only a 4-point game. You got to remember
that. It was, yeah. And this is a dangerous team. And, like, Nevada, that's about the equivalent of the team that they're going to end up playing in the round of 64.
And as a frame of reference on that Tulane game, the only team that has a worse rating for what's left on their schedule, Western Illinois. Everyone else is actually better than the Green Wave this year.
Yeah. But one of the things, if you're a fan of metrics, you can look South Dakota State's their resume-based matrix, you know, KPI and the 149, but their predictives are a lot higher, a lot better than they are. So that's one of the things where, you know, getting those predictive metrics in play here shows you that this is a team that is better than their record.
Yeah.
Anyhow, let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule and try to run through these last couple conferences here because we are starting to run out of time a little bit. But South Dakota State this week is at Omaha. Good test here coming up Thursday night for them, followed by a trip to North Dakota State, which has been a rivalry here in the conference the last few years.
Yep, has been, yeah.
I don't know that any team other than those two has made the NCAA tournament from this conference in like 300 years. Sunbelt.
No. Denver's hosted some games.
Sunbelt Conference, David, two-way tie for first place, but this conference has its standings way jumbled up at this point.
Yeah, and again, every time you start to kind of like a team, and I guess this speaks to the parity of the league, but it also says that like no one has really broken away and established themselves as a strong under-the-radar team. I do like this Texas State team. I know that I say I like a different team every week, whether it's Georgia State or Georgia Southern or Louisiana, but now I'm big on Texas State, and I do think that they're going to be the one that ultimately comes out of here.
Yeah, but by the same token, we've mentioned Monmouth. It would be kind of odd if this Monmouth team, of all their teams in recent memory, made the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this, yeah.
We could be saying the same thing about Texas Arlington the year after Brian Cross was fired.
Yeah, after we crucified the school for firing Brian Cross, too. And, and there's Texas Arlington now tied for first place, and they've been playing great basketball lately. I got to give credit for that. Upcoming schedule this week in the conference, Texas State is at Arkansas State and at Little Rock. So the two Texas teams have the Arkansas trip, while Georgia State will be hosting just one game this weekend. They'll be hosting South Alabama. Definitely got to don't forget about Georgia State, even though they lost a couple games recently.
Right, yeah. Because it wouldn't shock me if they ended up winning this tournament either.
Over in the WAC, we'll finish things off there where New Mexico State at Grand Canyon. David, you wanted to adjust the game a little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean...
After the Bakersfield game, too.
A huge week for New Mexico State. And I even though they were winning, they weren't really winning impressively, and I had a lot of question marks about them. So I've gone from really, really liking them to questioning them to really, really liking them again. The two road games that they won at Bakersfield and at Grand Canyon, I think, are the two hardest road games to win in the WAC, and for them to win them both the same week, everything that's hard is behind them. When you look at their remaining schedule, they aren't going to lose, I don't think, the rest of the way, all the way through the conference tournament.
I'm a little bit concerned about that Texas A&M International game coming up on February 19th, but...
Yeah.
But I think the story of the week has to be how New Mexico State actually won at Bakersfield in the first place, because they were down 10 points late in that game but managed to get that one into overtime and hit a game-winning three as the game clock expired in overtime.
Yeah, down two, and then the game-winning three at the buzzer. He was about 10 feet behind the three-point line, and the announcers weren't sure if it was a two or a three. It was the most pathetic broadcast I have ever
done. I know where you're going with this one.
Right.
Yeah. And that's going to be complaining about the court.
It's Bakersfield's floor is. It's like what an assault on the retinas it is. These announcers were an assault on the eardrums. It was just horrible.
Just a quick note, Texas Rio Grande Valley on Thursday night with a huge win at Grand Canyon before that big Lopes Aggies game. UTRGV now 14-12 overall. One of the best seasons we've seen out of this school, not only in its UTRGV days, but going back to its Texas Pan American days and earlier. So,
yeah.
Congrats to RGV for that win. And they got a real shot at the fourth seed to be wear white in the conference tournament, at least for one game.
And for people that think Seattle is good, they're not. Anyway.
If you think Chicago State are good,
there are none of them.
Okay. New Mexico State hosting Utah Valley, and then that Texas A&M International game in Seattle this week. Three games for them.
Don't forget Wayland Baptist and the Vaqueros.
Let's go over to our under-the-radar top 10 list real quick here. We've got a few honorable mentions. We'll start off with them. These are teams that did receive votes to be in the top 10, did not get there. They include Murray State, Old Dominion, Vermont, Toledo, and the Monmouth Hawks.
Wow, somebody voting for Monmouth. I guess that means Irvine's in.
That must mean, let's see here. Let's take a look at if Irvine is in and how high up they are. At number 10 is
Irvine.
All right, they made it, David.
Well, they made it. They made it in.
At number nine, Liberty, who off of that huge win at Lipscomb, there was some late adjustments to the voting that got them up into the top 10.
All good, all fair.
At number eight, Furman.
Ooh, that's pretty high for the Paladins, but you know, I think that they're the way they're playing now, they probably deserve it.
Hofstra comes in at number seven, and then coming above them at number six is that New Mexico State team we just discussed.
Yeah.
That definitely proved that they deserve to be up there.
I actually had them a spot or two higher.
Yale coming in at number five.
All right, yeah.
Still very good team out of the Ivy League there. And at number four, we're talking UNC Greensboro, the second best team in the SoCon.
Hovering around the bubble, and if they get the two this week, they might be on the right side of it.
They might be on number one on this list next week, too. At number three, we've got that Lipscomb team. Even after the loss tonight, still hanging in there in the top three. That's how good of a team we really think they are. Number two shouldn't be much of a surprise. It's that Belmont team.
Yeah.
And number one, absolutely no surprise. They deserve it completely. Wofford Terriers, number one team. Mm-hmm. In the Hoops HD Under the Radar top 10 list. And on that note, let's pull it down. And, John, I want to start with you for any final thoughts on the evening.
If we're highlighting the sixth leading scorer for William and Mary, which would be Paul Rowley, it's either for something very good or very bad. This would fall under the category of very good because he is actually the only player in a Division I that we know of that is a second-year law student, not pre-law, mind you, but the actual school of law for William and Mary. So definitely congratulations to him and best of luck on his future endeavors.
Well, having gone through law school myself, I got to tell you, to be able to actually play basketball while going to law school at a school like William & Mary on top of that, unbelievably impressive because you got to do a little bit of studying to get through law school. David, let me turn to you to end out the show.
This is more of a question for you two than a thought. We just saw our Under the Radar top 10. And while we were doing the show, I kind of had Auburn on, and here they are again losing at home to Ole Miss. Good Ole Miss team, but not exactly a road warrior. Where would Auburn rank if they were an under-the-radar team?
On that top 10 list, I would probably have Auburn, let's say they'd definitely be below Wofford, they'd be below Belmont, below Lipscomb, below Greensboro, below Yale. if I probably have them over Hofstra, I'd probably have them seventh.
Okay. But certainly, I mean, there are under-the-radar teams that are better than your power conference teams and multi-bid conference teams that probably won't be seeded or traditionally haven't been. And with all the talk with the net and like what David Warlock had told us at the beginning of the year, if you haven't listened to that, you should go back and dig it out of the archives.
We'll be posting it sometime in the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
Put that back up top.
You hope that this year's edition of the committee is paying attention because those teams, honestly, if they play Auburn on equal terms or even if they play at Auburn, they beat them. And they beat a lot of other teams. They beat Ole Miss. They probably beat a number of teams from those leagues, Oklahoma certainly, Indiana certainly, that are kind of being projected into a lot of teams' fields, right, or a lot of bracketology fields right now.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember Murray State, who I don't even think made our top 10 list. They made an honorable mention. They went to Auburn. They lost there by five.
Yeah.
So, and we've got a lot of teams that are better than them. But I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. I want to congratulate Mr. Salika for Xavier's first home win in forever. And
maybe their last of the year.
Maybe their last of the year. But I want to thank everyone for joining us. And we will be back again tomorrow night with a Bracket Rundown show. Have a good evening, everyone, or a good day, depending on when you're watching this.